Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone. Today is the 10th of September. I find that incredibly hard to believe. It just feels like it was Labor Day. It just feels like it was summer. It just feels like it was spring. And now we are headed right into winter. Everything is always changing, but there is one constant. And you know, I say it each morning here on Faith Radio Mornings, and that is that Jesus is risen and the tomb is empty. And so because that's true, we have reason to gather together as believers from around the country to talk about the news here on Faith Radio Mornings through the lens of our Christian faith. And hopefully with honesty and with hope. And what I love about the hope is it's not just some kind of hope we try to claim or say it really loud to convince other people. It really is a hope anchored in the fact that that tomb is empty, that death has been beaten, and one day God will finish wiping all the tears from our eyes and set things right. So it's Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host of the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner. Though my friends like producers Logan Rausch and Paul Perdue call me Peter, and I hope you do too as you call and text the show at 877-933-2484. Love having you part of the program. It's just delightful to hear from you. It's my favorite part of being the host of this show. And today, as always, we'll cover the news and special interest topics from not from the perspective of Republicans or Democrats, though we appreciate our political parties. We will try not to do so from liberal or conservative perspectives only. But in the words of Paul in Philippians and as citizens of heaven, that will be the lens through which we look at the news as we love our country. But at the end of the day, there really is only one kingdom that will remain in the end. And it's going to be a good show, especially this first hour ahead. The NFL season kicked off in full yesterday. And of course, there's been much in the news about the NFL regarding Nike and the former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick, who started this kneeling in front of the American flag during the national anthem, set off quite a firestorm in our country around that. The president has obviously chimed in on great many occasions about this and even did again yesterday as the season kicked off. And so I've asked my friend, Dr. Raleigh Washington, to join us to just talk through both dimensions of this from a kingdom standpoint. If you don't know Raleigh, he has both served in the military, so he has that perspective, and he's also been on the front lines of social justice and racial reconciliation as a pastor in inner city Chicago, as working with Promise Keepers as their president in our country for the last several decades. He's also one of three winners of the Westminster Peacemaking Award, the other two being Desmond Tutu and Mother Teresa, and so I'm very grateful for him to come and share some perspective on this first in this first hour. Then in the second half of the hour, Dr. Adam Carrington, professor of political science at Hillsdale College and my regular news conversation partner, will update us on the events out of Washington. There's always so much happening there, and we'll talk about the Supreme Court hearings, Bob Woodward's new book released tomorrow, other political news. So excited for that conversation. So lots to get into, and before we get in rolling into all of this, I'd love to set up our conversation with Raleigh by reading a passage out of Galatians that we can think through a bit this morning, where Paul writes this, that in Jesus Christ, we are all children of God through faith. For all of you who are baptized into Christ have clothed yourself with Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male or female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus and heirs according to the promise. So we have Dr. Raleigh Washington on the Colin Kaepernick and Nike situation next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 9 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and delighted to be joined on the line by friend Dr. Raleigh Washington. He's going to be talking with us this morning a bit about the Colin Kaepernick and the Nike situation. Good morning, Raleigh.
Morning, Peter. So blessed to be with you, my brother.
Well, really grateful for your voice on this, and we'll get into that, but I think some historical perspective just in terms of what's led up to some of these events. I mean, you've been working on racial reconciliation and justice for so many years, and I think one of my questions for you, Raleigh, is how much really have things changed over the last 25 or 30 years? I think about the time, in full disclosure here, you and I are friends. You were actually the pastor that married Hallie and me, and I think about that time 25 years ago now where you stood up as an African-American pastor and married a couple in an all-white church. That wasn't that far removed from the civil rights movement that was going on. So I'm curious, just from the perspective of history, what that was like back then and what things are like today.
Peter, good question. A word that drives me is a more familiar word than reconciliation. That word is relationship. During that time, I could have felt like a fly in a bowl of milk. And felt odd, but I felt very much at home because, Peter, of the relationship between your dad and your mom. They loved me and Paulette for who I was. We loved them. We got to know you and Hallie. It was relationship. And because of the relationship, I didn't feel odd. I felt very, very much at home. And so I really think that, considering the times and considering what circumstances are, more relationships across racial lines will really eliminate the dynamic. I mean, you and Hallie open up to me. Paulette and I counsel you. We married you. We love you guys. We followed you. It's been an absolute glorious relationship. And when you have relationship, And that relationship is genuine, all of a sudden, race loses its ability to divide or even make a difference. It's all about genuine relationships.
Boy, and that's just really not where we are so often in this conversation, is it? Where we're sort of busy on social media platforms shouting things at one another and just the absence of relationship. And people don't seem to have really the time these days to really be thinking about what it would mean to get in relationship with other people.
Without question, times has changed, Peter, in a phenomenal way. I was born and raised in Jacksonville, Florida, and I'm living here, been here since May, and more than 50 years since I've lived here. I visited because of my mother was here, my family was here, but it's a different dynamic. I can't believe how many black folks are living in white neighborhoods, and I can't believe how often I wear a hat that shows I was a veteran from the services, and white people stop me, want to shake my hand and thank me for the service and respond to me. These are white people. And I mean, you know, that's not my memory from Jacksonville, Florida. So things have changed drastically for the good, unquestionably, across the board. I think the problem with so many of my African-American brothers and sisters is, because things have changed and because of social media and TV and things of that nature, although things are so much better than they were 30, 40 years ago, tremendously different, they want things to be even better because of the knowledge of how good life is or how better things are or how good certain people are doing, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, all of that. They want things to be better, even more perfect. So the glass is not half full in terms of relationship and reconciliation. It's three quarters full or more, but they still see it as half empty because the standard and expectation continues to increase with the knowledge of how the world is and what the what's good and great in the world across the board. So I think that's the number. It's a sliding standard that has impacted people, but have changed, actually changed unquestionably in a phenomenal way.
That's Dr. Raleigh Washington. And Raleigh, I would love your perspective just then getting into the Colin Kaepernick situation, who is highlighting that more change is needed. And that does seem to sort of allow us to forget that so much change has happened, but there still is change coming. And I would love your perspective on this conversation in terms of you both served in the military and you also have been in the front lines and been deeply impacted by social justice reconciliation conversation. So kind of talk us through both sides of this issue.
You know, I, having served 20 years in the military, I'm a patriot. I believe in America. America is the best nation to possibly live in. And I learned in the military to honor my nation, to honor the flag, and to honor the authorities who are placed over me, which is a biblical principle for Christians as well. And so when I look at what happens, I understand Colin's concern and those who identify with them. They're a different generation than myself, but I understand their concern. They want to see things better. They still see issues that need to be changed in various areas, and they're impatient to see that. I understand that, and I can appreciate that, and I appreciate their right to protest what's wrong, but I absolutely abhor the method in which has been used, because to kneel during the national anthem when everyone is asked to stand in respect and honor, and they kneel, it is to me dishonoring the national anthem, dishonoring the flag, and I think that's wrong. That offends me tremendously, because I spent 20 years fighting for the right to live in this country, in a free country, and to honor it. And it's so wrong. Tiger Woods was asked once, what do you think of the president? And he's a friend, because he's played golf with him. And Tiger Woods said, we must respect the office. And he didn't go any further. And I so appreciated what he said. But then I saw a statement recently in this Nike dynamic where he said, the Nike ad is beautiful. And my heart sort of sank. I understand it, because he probably doesn't look at it from the respected perspective that I do. I understand the right. I respect people's right to protest. But I cannot support and am offended when they choose to dishonor our national anthem and our flag in order to protest what is good. Dr. Martin Luther King made a difference, and he caused laws to be changed in terms of the civil rights movement. But he did it by turning the other cheek. And the only thing that he went against that was lawful was what the rules and laws that that discriminated against black people that were not good. His word was, an unjust law is no law at all. I agree with that. And that's why he got national support. And that's why things changed. But if you go against the national anthem and you dishonor that, how can you expect the majority of the nation to support what you're doing? So I feel it is counterproductive. I feel that what Nike has done is negative. Now, I have a good friend, Peter, who is a former top executive in Nike. He gave me a great perspective. He believes, as I do as a Christian, the process by which Colin and those who support him or protesting is wrong and is against what we should be doing as Christians. But he says it's a marketing coup. They believe that they're right because they knew that LeBron James and Serena Williams and others who are very popular would support them, and they would get really to embrace them, the millennial folks, and they're buying all of it. So they think from a marketing cue, they're ultimately going to win. So I understand that business perspective. But for Christians who believe that we should live our lives according to the word of God, we should never, ever dishonor our national anthem.
That's Dr. Raleigh Washington. Give us perspective on the conversation with Colin Kaepernick and Nike and the kneeling before the American flag. Raleigh, when we come back from break, I would love to get into a little bit more about some of your comments of Martin Luther King Jr. and love being at the heart of our ability to walk towards justice together. So more with Raleigh Washington next on Faith Radio Morning. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined on the line by Dr. Raleigh Washington, who's worked in the front lines of social justice and racial reconciliation conversations for several decades and just has a global perspective on so many of these issues. And Raleigh, we've been talking about Colin and Kaepernick and the Nike situation, and I'd be curious your thoughts in terms of if this isn't maybe the best way to protest, because there is still injustice that is there. And to your point, the standard of living and the reconciliation has gotten better in the last 30 or 40 years. But can you contrast for me just the idea of love being the heartbeat of reconciliation, which is what Dr. Martin Luther King really brought into play, versus sort of a fist-shaking anger? I mean, one seems to have a much more staying power than the other.
Well, without question, you know, the Word of God teaches us as believers, if you humble yourself, the Lord will lift you up. And Dr. Martin Luther King was incredibly humble. When they spit in his face, he just wiped it away. When they would slap him, when he turned the other cheek. He was very humble. And as a result of his biblical approach in terms of how he behaved, he got white pastors and Jewish leaders to stand with him, even laying down their lives to make a difference. During that time, I remember seeing in the museum in Selma, Alabama, there was a white mother who had three small kids who went to pick up black people to bring them back when they marched from Selma to across the Norman Pettus Bridge. And during that time when she did that, she was caught and murdered by those who hated what she was doing. But because of the public outcry of that, the result was laws were changed that were bad, that were changed, and good came out of that, all because of Martin Luther King's nonviolent and humble approach to make a change. His protests would meet the test of Christians protesting. And so love is a process, a loving process, undergirded by humility, makes all the difference when you want to see change take place. My pastor on Sunday preached about prayer, and he talked about why Peter was in prison, and he was in prison there all of the wrong reasons. Yet an angel of the Lord came and released him and brought him back. But what was the church, the small church that he was a part of, what were they doing? They were fervently praying. See, my feeling as a believer in Christ and as a pastor, the way Christians protest is not by dishonoring the national anthem, but by praying, because prayer changes things. And if we are praying, that's our method for protesting. And we can find other methods of protesting that do not dishonor what is right, because the scripture tells us, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. And when we do things right, according to what Caesar requires us, or the law requires us, or the government requires us, we will gain proper support across racial lines to change wrong things into right things. I think that's the approach we should use.
Yeah, and that really was the historic approach of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., too, that gave such traction in this country. Raleigh, we just have a couple minutes left here, and I'd be curious, one last piece of this is that when I look back through the history of this, I see that King Jr. was as for people that were not African-American. He was as for his white brothers and sisters as he was for those of African-American descent, Asian descent. It didn't matter. Can you just speak to the importance of really being for one another in this entire process?
Without question, the success of Martin Luther King's march for civil rights to change things is that he embraced all communities. And what probably most African-Americans today, 90% of whom are Democrats, do not realize, he was a Republican and a conservative, because he felt like that fit was a better fit for his political views. But Martin Luther King, he embraced whites and Hispanics, Native Americans, And when he marched, they were with him. If you look at any of the clips, you will see that he walked hand in hand with people of other races. And as a result of doing that, it makes all the difference in the world. When they marched across the Norman Pettus Bridge, the Edmund Pettus Bridge, when they marched across, it was white people in that crowd, almost equal number of blacks, that made all of the difference. So when we stand hand in hand for what is right, especially from a Christian perspective, there are white brothers and sisters who will stand with you to make a difference. As a pastor on the west side of Chicago, that was 90% African American and it was poor, oppressed, and needy, man, I gave some wonderful meals and had some wonderful outreaches, all because of your church, Peter, Wayzata Evangelical Free Church, all white and white youth people, and your mom leading all of the wives, doing all of the cooking that made all of the difference. What happens there? It was my relationship with my white brothers and sisters. Your mom and dad in Wayzata, Minnesota, we came together, locked arms, and we started a revival on the west side of Chicago that was 90% African-American. So love, humility, patience, and honoring what is right will always make the best difference in a protest. And as Christians, we pray for change and not necessarily protest in the wrong way.
Such a helpful perspective. I have to say that growing up in the household and watching you model that relationship, I didn't even know what we had in those moments, but it made such an impact on me as a child. And I think about the impact we can have on the next generations if we can continue to model this relationship approach to this. So, Raleigh, thanks so much for your time this morning. I really appreciate the perspective. Give our love to Paulette and look forward to the next time you're on Faith Radio with us.
Hey, bless you and howdy, Peter.
We'll take a short break and for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News, and be joined by Adam Carrington, a professor of politics at Hillsdale University College, here next on Faith Radio Mornings. So appreciated Dr. Washington's comments and perspective on this conversation with Colin Kaepernick, Nike, and racial reconciliation, and particularly from the lens of the Christian perspective, that we move towards one another in love and relationships, and that really does end up bringing change at the end of the day. More to come here in this first hour, where Adam Carrington, the professor of politics at Hillsdale College, will join us, and I'll ask him about the release of famed journalist Bob Woodward's book tomorrow on President Trump and how that matches up with the op-ed in the New York Times last week on the inner workings of the White House. Last Friday on Faith Radio Mornings, we are joined by Adam Holtz, who does movie reviews and different media conversations with us. And he was talking with us about the importance for grandparents and parents to do their homework relative to the shows that we're watching.
You take the rating as a jumping off point. Okay, this is what some people in Hollywood think is appropriate, but you need to do the homework as a parent to know, well, what's really in this? The same could be said of R-rated movies. There's an incredible spread of content in R-rated movies, and I know some people, quite a few people, who would say, I just don't see R-rated movies, period. They're out of bounds. And I totally understand and respect that. But, you know, if something gets an R rating because it has three F-words instead of two, and that's the only content, it actually might be much less problematic than a PG-13 movie that is really pushing the boundaries. And so I think that we have to take the ratings a little bit with a grain of salt and just understand that we need to do our own homework as parents.
So grateful to have Adam as part of the show just to talk us through some of these movies and different TV shows streaming on Netflix, Amazon Prime, some of these different mediums of shows that our kids are watching these days, as he does such a great job reviewing them. You can go ahead and go to myfaithradio.com and search for Adam Holtz for movie reviews, and pluggedin.com. Any of those search terms will get you to that conversation we had last week. Coming up next, I see on the line, we have Adam Carrington, a regular conversation partner here on Faith Radio Mornings. And we're going to ask Adam about the release of Bob Woodward's new book about the Trump presidency next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Young people of today have grown up in an atmosphere particularly unfriendly to Christianity, biblical truth, and traditional values. This is Jim Garlow. peer pressure has become a significant influence on our youth, a primary source being social media. It's where their friends gather and share unfiltered opinions. Millennials have been raised largely in an atmosphere devoid of absolute truth, in many cases not knowing that all ideas have consequences that can and should be measured. Unless we intentionally encourage them to love truth, they won't develop the habit of seeking truth. And many will accept the first thing they read on the internet. Approach a young person with the characteristics associated with God's wisdom in James 3. The wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason. There's a lot more to help you in this precarious moment in our history at jimgarlow.com.
It's about 21 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and joined in the line by Dr. Adam Carrington, who visits with us regularly on Faith Radio Mornings, just talking about politics and what's happening in Washington. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right. Last time you were on the program, we were bemoaning the fact that, you know, sort of our life of luxury in the summers as professors was coming to an end and class was starting. Have you got back in the rhythm? Are you still suffering for the kingdom, Adam?
I'm wearing my scars proudly, sort of like in Henry V's St. Crispin's Day speech, where they say they will remember with additions what they did. But no. I think things are going just fine. I as soon as I get back into the rhythm, it's really enjoyable to have the students back, actually. They're a lot of fun, and they bring an energy to campus that's just not there when they're gone.
Yeah, it's so true. I can just feel just sort of this empty halls, you know, and they come in, and that energy is just so fun to be a part of. So there's lots going on last week that I'd love to get your perspective on. It felt like a quieter weekend, thankfully, but we did see quite a bit of theater last week with the Judge Brett Kavanaugh hearings and the confirmation of the Supreme Court Justice. Just talk us through what your perspective was and what happened, some of the grandstanding, all of that, Adam.
They were long, about 12 hours a day to start with, so there was a lot going on. But I think in some ways, building off things we've said about the Kavanaugh nomination here and the possible hearings before, it showed that Kavanaugh was competent, he was thoughtful. In many ways, he was the smartest guy in the room on constitutional law, as he should be as a nominee. But I think the reaction to that is, on one hand, you did get some decent questioning. I thought Chuck Grassley did some decent questioning, Ben Sasse, some of those guys. On the other hand, I think you did get a lot of, as you said, grandstanding, that where some of the people that wanted to oppose him, say Cory Booker or Kamala Harris, really tried to play gotcha, really tried to play for, I think, their base back home. And it just did not, I think, look good, and it did not really advance what I think those hearings are supposed to be, which is to ask, what is a good judge, and would Kavanaugh fit that? So I think it really shows that nothing got moved, and that Kavanaugh seems to be sailing to probably not an overwhelming confirmation, but they did nothing to really wound the majority that I think is going to support him.
Well, and at the end of the day, the Democrats, at least some of them, felt more like they're running for their 2020 platform than they were actual questioning. They know the math is against them, but it really seemed an opportunity for some of them to show their political chops to the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and one thing I don't quite understand is why they spend almost a whole day on opening statements, where the senators are allowed to just make opening statements when it's really an interview. And I think that shows that for some, the reason they want to have these is not so much to grill the candidate and try to get down to whether this person should be confirmed or not, but really that they are trying to create clips for commercials back home. I think, you know, I like that cameras create a kind of transparency, but I think at the same time they create a kind of fakeness at the same time, because when you know you're in front of the camera, you play to that audience. And I think that's something where the camera gives and the camera takes away as far as helping political discourse.
With that, one of my favorite moments, too, was just in front of the camera when Senator Cory Booker decided to have the Spartacus moment and supposedly break all rules within the proceedings by releasing classified emails. Was he just sort of playing to that resist Trump movement, the Never Trump movement at that point?
Yeah, and it turns out that there's a question as to whether they actually were classified, whether he was trying to create himself a hero when he didn't even do what he said he was doing.
But yes, I think that's an attempt to show, and I think that again shows the desperation, because how do you show when you really have no ace up your sleeve to sink the nomination? How do you actually show that you're really trying? You're willing to even break the rules to try to play gotcha. And I think that again just shows that I think President Trump, if he wanted to have as smooth a confirmation process as possible, he picked a really good candidate. In many ways, he picked the most boring candidate. But I think in doing that, he really solidified and made the opposition look a lot more desperate than they would have otherwise.
Mm. My understanding is, too, that the new Supreme Court session starts in October. So in the next few weeks, do we see some more movement where they hope to have him fully confirmed at that point?
Yes, I think he will be, unless something wild happens that we don't know about, he will be confirmed and he will sit on the bench beginning that first Monday in October when the court takes session.
Well, and of course, the consternation from the left is that the court is going to tip 5-4 substantially towards the right. Are we going to see this again in the 2020 election cycle, that so much of what happened in 16 was the idea that Supreme Court justices were going to be picked, but there's some older judges again on the court? Is this going to be another? It feels like we have several years ahead, Adam, where this is going to be an ongoing conversation in our country.
Oh, absolutely. We've got Ruth Bader Ginsburg is in her mid-80s. We've got one other, Justice Breyer, who I believe crossed the 80 mark. Justice Thomas is young by comparison, but he's still 70. So you absolutely are finally seeing a generational shift where we're going to go from replacing one or two justices every 8 years to replacing four or five in the span of 8 years or less. And the interesting thing about that is actually going to be how it affects the left. When they did polling for voters that were politically more conservative in 2016, the judges issue was a huge issue, a really dominant issue that brought a lot of people to vote for President Trump. That hasn't been a driving force for the left. Judges have just not been a rallying cry for them. But given the Kavanaugh making the court much more originalist and textualist than it has been in the past, I wonder if that's going to be actually a rallying cry for them for the first time in the upcoming elections. Because absolutely, you're going to have at least two, maybe three more vacancies in the next 4 to 5 years.
Well, and of course, we have some significant elections coming up here in a couple of months with the midterms and the House of Representatives and the Senate at stake. And we did see the reemergence of President Obama this last weekend, where he gave some speeches in Chicago and California, and he seems to try to be rallying the Democratic Party. Do you see this as a positive and negative for the Democrats, maybe a combination of both?
That is going to be interesting, because I think he has an ability to rally Democrats unlike any other figure in the field right now. There really is no other figure that has that unifying concept, certainly not Hillary Clinton. But at the same time, I think he has the potential to do what the Democrats are hoping doesn't happen, which is give some more energy to the Republican Party's base. So I think it depends upon how he does it. I think so far he's probably doing a little more help to the Democrats than he is hurting them. But there's a chance that an ex-president criticizing a current president, you have to walk a really fine line to not sound like you're being self-serving. So I think that it's a fairly dangerous move for the Democrats. I don't think it's blown up in their face yet, but I think there's more risk than reward long-term in him jumping in the way he is.
That's the voice you know, Adam Carrington, a professor of political science at Hillsdale College. And Adam, when we come back from break, I would love to get your take on the release of Bob Woodward's new book coming out tomorrow that is getting into sort of the inside look at the Trump's presidency, at least his perspective, and even compare and contrast that with the New York Times op-ed that was released last week. So more to come with Adam Carrington here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 10 minutes before the top of the hour. I'm Peter Kapsner, and joined on the line by Adam Carrington. And Adam, curious, do you have any classes later today? What are you teaching?
Actually, I've got three today. Today's one of my heavier days. I teach a constitutional law graduate class later on today, this morning, then an American political thought, and then a U.S. Constitution, which is our basic 101 course in the politics department. So it'll be a full day, but a good day as well.
Well, I'd love it if you could FaceTime me in, and maybe I can just sort of experience your class on a virtual basis, Adam.
You'd be welcome. I'd welcome any feedback from another colleague saying what I'm doing better and worse.
I think I could appreciate that, too. So maybe I won't FaceTime you into my class, Adam. I'm scared what you might say.
No, I you know what? I love the concept of not just what I teach, but I love the idea of thinking about how to teach and how to improve and what gets to different students that have different learning styles. That's really when I knew that this is what I wanted to do for a living, was not just that I loved the material, but that I loved that moment of moving from not knowing to knowing. And that's a joy to do myself, but it's a joy to watch other good professors do it too with their students.
I'm sure you're a gift in the classroom if you're as committed to the students as you are to the content. That's a rare blend for professors. So I'd love to take your class sometime, Adam. And also just for this morning, get your perspective on the release of Bob Woodward's new book that's coming out tomorrow titled Fear. And it's sort of maybe body blow number two to the president relative to what seemed to be the inner workings in the White House. You have the New York Times op-ed, an anonymous op-ed published by supposedly a member of the administration of Trump that's trying to thwart his agenda. And now you have Bob Woodward coming out this week. How much of this do you see, Adam, as a legitimate critique of the president versus maybe two pretty well-respected organizations in the Washington Post and the New York Times trying to one-up each other?
I'm not to cut the baby, but there's a little bit of, I think, both going on. And I think it's troubling whatever you believe, whichever way you believe it, it's very troubling, because it's not, if you believe it's mostly lies, and this is a very negative view of the president, of how the White House operates, of what of the president's capacity as far as operating in the office of chief executive, it's really bad both ways, and I think a little of both might be probably true. On one hand, I think it's distressing that that you would have a president that seems to be this impulsive, this willing to look into the particular policy matters that are before him, that seems to act against a lot of advice. And I think that there is some danger there, and I think there is probably some truth there. But then the other worry is it's not just the news media that seems to be making this up. The accusations keep coming from inside the White House. And if this is getting made up, I think you have the problem of people around the president not serving his best interests, not being willing to go along with his opinions, and not being loyal to the executive office. And so either way you cut it, it's dangerous, because either the president is dangerous to some degree or the people around him are dangerous to him. And I think, you know, given some of the people he's had around him, like Omarosa, Steve Bannon, some of these guys, it probably is a little bit of both. And either way, I think is very concerning, and needs to be cleared up one way or another, because it can't stand the way it was put forward in the anonymous op-ed and in the book.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that there isn't some level of impulsivity happening behind the scenes, given what we see in public. And yet at the same time, we also know there are people who would do everything to resist Trump. And so I'd be curious, there was on your take on some of the response from the Democratic side of it, of course, seized on this opportunity. And Elizabeth Warren suggests that invoking the 25th Amendment might be appropriate here in terms of removing Trump from office due to incompetency. Can you talk us through just sort of the constitution of the 25th Amendment and what's required to invoke that?
Right. The 25th Amendment was set up because there wasn't a real clear way of dealing with if the president resigned, or particularly if he became incapacitated from office, how you transfer power to the vice president. And I think that while technically you might be able to make a case that the cabinet could decide that incompetency came from the certain character flaws, I think that this was really meant to deal with what if the president goes into a coma, what if he actually does have a real legitimate nervous breakdown, and the process would therefore go for the vice president to take over. And so I think the main thing is that Elizabeth Warren's is a little too cute given what I think the circumstances were supposed to be. And therefore, I think that it probably goes a bit too far. Some conservatives tried to make that argument as well, I would add.
Yeah, and it's just interesting. Of course, no people who are running for office are going to seize any opportunity. And Adam, I'd be curious your take on the importance of trying to figure out who was it that penned the op-ed in the New York Times. Of course, the Vice President Mike Pence came out this weekend and said that he'd be willing to take a lie detector test to prove that it wasn't him. But that was some of the whisperings, of course. But just even some of the code words that were in the op-ed suggested it could have been Pence. But what's the importance of trying to figure out who this person is within the White House?
I think it's important because even if you don't agree, and one of the confusions of the op-ed is I think at times it noted some troubling habits in the way the president conducts himself. On the other hand, it just noted policy disagreements, and I think the latter is completely illegitimate for a subordinate executive officer to complain about. But I think it's important because if the president really is like this, then and it's really that troubling, people need to come out in the open and say it. They need to say it under oath. They need to say it to their name. If not, then people who are anonymously taking stabs at the president need to be outed because they need to not be in the White House undermining a duly elected president's agenda. So either way, I think finding out who this is very important, regardless of how much truth you take stock to what was said.
Well, Adam, I sure love your perspective and joining us on Faith Radio Mornings as always. And I hope you have a good day enjoying your three classes today, the heavier load and the time with the students. So enjoy the rest of your day and week, Adam.
Same to you, and thanks for having me.
Of course. We'll take a break here and wrap up the first hour of our show. Really appreciate the voices of Dr. Raleigh Washington as well as Dr. Adam Carrington. Just an ability to sort of cut through the rancor of the day, just sort of the lack of kindness that so happens in our conversations. And that does then preview our next guest at the top of next hour. It's Nicole J. Phillips, who's a regular contributor to the show. And she just released a book about the courage of kindness, 100 stories of what's happening in our lives. And I just think it's so important to focus on some of the positives in the midst of the negative headlines of the day. So Nicole Phillips up next on Faith Radio Mornings and the importance of kindness.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.